Nike in the crosshairs of China's yearly brand bashing rally on Wednesday night. An infamous state media show known as 315 skewering the sports brand for false advertising, saying it misled customers over air cushions in its Hyperdunk basketball shoes. The Consumer Rights Day special names and shames big firms for bad behavior and has taken aim at Apple and Volkswagen in the past, sending corporate PR teams scurrying to take evasive action.
With the exit polls as they are, is that Geert Wilders has failed in what many suspected he might be able to achieve, which was to win the most seats in the Dutch parliament. That hasn't happened. The incumbent Mark Rutte, his VVD party, winning the most seats, 31 seats, 21% of the vote.
Today, the Federal Open Market Committee decided to raise the target range for the federal funds rate by 0.25 percentage point, bringing it to 0.75% to 1%. Today's decision also reflects our view that waiting too long to scale back some accommodation could potentially require us to raise rates rapidly sometime down the road, which in turn could risk disrupting financial markets and pushing the economy into recession.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Thursday. It's March the 16th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along with us on another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. Lots to cover today. We'll have our thought leader conversation momentarily, go over what the latest news is in the mortgage world. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, here are the numbers. And we have a lot of green arrows this morning. Dow futures are up 60 points. NASDAQ futures are up about 17 points. S&P is right there behind, up about 7 points. In Asia and Europe, everything is in positive territory. Right now in Europe, the FTSE in DAX leading the way in Europe, up about 1% each, followed by the CAC. In Asia, the stocks there generally ended the night higher, will end the night higher, up about 13 points. The Nikkei will be, and Hang Seng in Shanghai following close behind. Of course, the big news yesterday was the announcement by Janet Yellen. You heard her there in the opening montage with interest rates. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates for the second time in 3 months, a move spurred on by steady economic growth, strong job gains, and confidence that inflation is rising to the central bank's target. As a matter of fact, at one point, Janet Yellen said, "We can all feel okay again that the economy is on solid footing." The decision to lift the target overnight interest rate by 25 basis points to a range of almost 0.75% to 1% marked a convincing step by the Fed in their effort to return monetary policy to more normal footing. Janet Yellen again sharing her growing faith in the economy's trajectory. However, the Federal Reserve did not flag any plan to accelerate the pace of monetary tightening, with the Policy Setting Committee reiterating and Janet Yellen emphasizing that future rate increases would be gradual. At the current pace, rates would not return to a neutral level, though, until the end of 2019. We're going to talk about this morning with our thought leader. He has 27 years of residential mortgage business at the Associated Bank. John Horton is the vice president and senior lending manager at Associated Bank, specializing in construction loans, jumbo mortgages, and refinancing. John, good to see you again.
Good to see you. Thanks, Steve.
Well, the big announcement yesterday, the big day, we've seen an interest rate hike now, finally, for the first time this year.
I know there will be ups, there'll be downs. You know, following the market is tough. People look at it, it's almost like the stock market. If you think you knew everything, we'd be sitting on a beach somewhere, and it's just a tough call. Rates, like we had talked about before, they're going to be baked in. We had a little jump yesterday to bake in the rate hike, so people aren't going to be extremely either upset or excited, one or the other. But it's one of those things, there's nothing you can do about it. We kind of lived the good life for a long time, 7 years with the Fed talking about it and nothing happening. Mm-hmm. It's bound to happen. But it can go down as quick as it can go up as well.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like, too, hearing Janet Yellen, it sounds like she's planning on more than sitting on the sidelines this year. It sounds like there might be more than one or two or three, maybe even more than three.
Yeah, that's where she was going. Now, there's a flip side of that as far as the banks go. Our president of Associated Bank, Phil Flynn, does a weekly or a monthly town hall meeting, and he talks about the mortgage department, which has led the bank due to the low interest rates and the revenue. But on the flip side, you have the depositors who are not flocking to banks anymore because you're not getting your deposit rates. The banks are suffering because the revenue on the deposit side is so low. So it's interesting to hear a different side of the fence, because residential mortgage at Associated, we look at that. You look at all lines of business. But as he put it, you do need that to attract the customers, to bring in the deposits, which obviously can fund the loans and keeps banks and their customers in a good spot.
And we're certainly seeing some anecdotal information, too, from folks. One of the latest national reports before the interest rate, applications for home loans up about 3%, refis up about 4%. So there's activity there.
There's a lot of activity. People go on the news. They go on the superstition. Let's get in. Let's see what we do. We had several calls yesterday from borrowers that say, hey, I know I've been floating. Let's lock it in. I don't want to be open to the market. So they're playing a game, and you do get sometimes where that'll happen. Rates go down. They're not going to drop by a quarter. They're not going to drop by 3/8. You may see a fluctuation depending on what the rest of the market does. We've seen the Fed at times raise rates. It's had an adverse effect on the market. So you may get a little more in deposits, but you may get a little less on your mortgage rates. ARM rates, for instance. ARM rates, your adjustable rate mortgages, aren't inclined to raise as quickly as your fixed rate, your 10, your 15, your 20, and your 30-year fixed rate. So there's also an option if you're looking for that lower payment to look at an ARM product.
So if somebody's out there listening and they're thinking, they're not going to raise interest rates this year that many times, what would you tell them? I mean, it's probably a good time to stop sitting on your hands, right?
You know, it's a good time to stop sitting on your hands. And again, a lot of times people can afford more than they think. They're either listening to their friends that aren't in the business, or make a phone call. Pick up the phone. Give one of our lenders a call and walk through the process. It's not going to cost you anything. You're going to get a little bit of education, and you may find that your $200,000 mortgage is cheaper than your $1,500 rent payment that you have right now.
Never hurts to give you a call and at least get in the planning stages, right?
Absolutely not. And it could be you're finding more millennials. We were actually talking about that last month as well. A lot of millennials are having a difficult time purchasing a home because, number one, it's student loan debt. They're graduating college, they have student loan debt, and they have a car payment. It could blow them out of the water. So you're really picking up the phone, seeing what you have, running the numbers. You can do it without pulling credit. We will give a, call it consultation, but kind of off the cuff, what is your debt? You might not hit everything, but you get a nice ballpark on what you might be able to afford.
So where are people moving? Are they moving to the suburbs? Are they moving to the city? What are we seeing in terms of prices? And I saw this one report about Elmhurst being the big new hub for million-dollar homes.
The western burbs. Yeah. You're seeing a little bit of both. You're finding a lot of the younger folks that want the school system for their children in the suburbs moving out to western burbs such as Elmhurst, Clarendon Hills, Hinsdale. Those new construction houses, million-dollar homes. There were 41 listed in a subdivision in Elmhurst. 36 were over a million, and I think 21 had sold since January of this year. But on the flip side, you're finding a lot of baby boomers that are empty nesters that want to downsize the house, get back to the city, live in a condo, have the Rush Street experience all over again, and kind of relive their youth.
What makes a million-dollar home? I always, when I picture something that expensive, I always think of that term McMansion. Are they McMansions, or are they just really nice homes?
You know, depending on the area, you'll find some that are 4,000, 5,000 square feet that are a million, million three, but you're really paying for your area. You're paying for the schools, the fire departments, the libraries, convenience. The reason Elmhurst is a big push, it's close to the city. You have a beautiful downtown in Elmhurst. You're real close to the expressway to hop on the city. Downtown, take the train. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. You're living in the burbs, but you have access to the city for employment or weekends or whatever you need it for.
They probably have yards, too.
They do have yards. That, you know, that's a big push, too, because you do get a lot of homes in the city where you have kids, but you want to let them out and play in the concrete jungle. There's no grass. You go out in the burbs in these homes, and they do have nice-sized yards where the kids can go out and play, walk to the park.
What's on the flip side of that scale? What would be at the low end, and are there bargains to be had on some of those low-end prices?
There's bargains. You do see a lot of people, a lot of older people that are either retiring or downsizing that have lived in their homes. We saw one last week. The house has not changed since 1973. The size of the computers in the basement, it looks like you step back in time. This lady was selling her house. Her husband had passed away, and she was actually offering it to the friends of her son, who wanted the house. So you know what? Again, it's communication. Put down the internet and pick up the phone.
I always hear in the back of my head my grandfather saying, well, those homes were really built well back then. Are they some really nice built homes? Is that accurate?
They're well built, but they might need a little bit of updating. the shag carpeting and the tile on the ceilings might need to go, but what you're saving in the purchase, you're going to make up for in the remodel.
So who's faring better? You mentioned earlier that millennials, we always go back to them, but what are some of the other generations, Generation X, the baby boomers, who's faring the best in the housing market these days?
Well, right now with the student loan debt, your baby boomers' average student loan debt right now is about $10,000. Gen X is about $30,000, and millennials are averaging about $25,000 in student loan debt. So if you look at it that way, less debt would be the baby boomers. You're also, on the flip side, finding the millennials with more children. It's gone up 1.1 children, which I never, ever understand how you can have 0.1 of a person, but that's the statistics, have gone up 45%. 49% of millennial buyers had at least one child, which is up 45% from last year and 43% from the year before.
Is it possible that 0.1 is a cat or a dog? Or...
I'm thinking it's something, or yeah. It's something.
Right. Well, wasn't Generation X the generation that was hit by the 2008 housing crisis? Were they hurt the most?
They were hurt the most because they bought it right before that happened. They were affected by the job loss, by the housing crisis, by the lower sales prices. And it's hard for those Generation X's, it's harder for them to move now than anybody else simply because of where they're at and what they were caught in.
And I also saw a report where there's sort of a mentality to almost, I don't want to call it a PTSD mentality, but they were so impacted negatively by that 2008 crisis that they're really thinking twice and three times about ever owning again. Are you seeing that, and how do you counsel people that might be thinking that way?
You know, it's absolutely true. They do. It's almost like they're retreating from the home buying arena because they were burned so bad. A lot of them right now are starting to come out of the weeds. They're starting to see that things have leveled off, that prices are going up. Can they go back down? Absolutely. Not to the effect that they got caught in, but you are seeing a lot of those home buyers that have sat back and said, okay, now might not be a bad time. You know, put your toe in the water, see how it is. And I think the more they do it, you're going to see kind of a little wave. More do it, they'll talk to friends, they'll talk to family. But it's absolutely one of the generations that got hurt so bad. 401ks were wiped out. Stocks were wiped out. Housing was wiped out. That's a hard thing to bounce back from.
Is it that their credit was also impacted negatively, that they're maybe still recovering from that? Were there bankruptcies that followed?
Some were. Some with bankruptcies, some with adjustable rate mortgages that, say, started at 2%. And then they reset 5 years later at 4%. Then they were at 6%. Then they were at 8%. They can go up a cap of 2 a year with a cap of 6%. So you might have someone that had a 3% mortgage that might have ended up at 9%. And that payment is out of hand. Their job was lost. So if you lose your job, your payment goes up by 2%. You lose your 401k. A lot of people just tossed in their keys.
The good thing, though, about the market, and at least the positive news that we're seeing, is that home values are climbing up. It's still really good to be a homeowner, isn't it?
It's actually still one of the American dreams. It's the Gen X's. That's still their number one thing they want to do. They want to own a home. And it's also funny, the people with homes larger than 2,000 square feet want smaller homes. The people with homes with less than 2,000 square feet want bigger homes. So you're finding those people that want to sell the big homes. You have people that want to buy the bigger homes, and they're selling smaller homes. If you could match those people together, it'd be perfect.
So what else might be in line here? I mean, do you have a crystal ball to see what may be coming this year in this area?
Steve, if I had a crystal ball, we would be doing this from Hawaii. I'll be honest with you. I'll tell you what I think is coming is you are finding the phones are ringing a lot more. You are finding people that want to talk to people, that want to hear what's going on. You know, if you listen to the news, you listen to what's going on, you pick up the phone and have a conversation. It's just, I mean, communication fixes everything. You might be in a great spot, you might be in a horrible spot, but take the time to work on it. Construction loans at Associated Bank are flying out the door. The building going on in such areas as Elmhurst, the western suburbs, even in the city. New construction is key. People want to walk into a house that they designed. Here's my house, here's what I want. It's hard to find that in another home.
And the development, too, the development projects, I'm thinking of the CHA and this next phase of the Cabrini Green area. Places in the city, you mentioned the cranes earlier, but we're seeing a lot of these different construction projects. Lots being built, but let's talk a little bit about this Cabrini Green project.
You know, and that is a huge development for Associated Bank as well as other lenders, CRA, the Community Reinvestment Act. There are so many grants available, too many to mention. A lot of them are centralized in your community. Lake County has some, DuPage does, Cook does. So there's opportunities in the new Cabrini Green area or the other areas that they're building in the low to mod income areas. You can Google that, but again, it's a lot easier if you pick up the phone and say, is my home in this area? Do I qualify for the grants? And Associated Bank actually has experts in that area. I can tell you right now, you want to gear that to someone that is going to take care of you. You don't want to go to a closing and end up spending more than you think. You want that consultative approach that can get you in those LMI areas, that can tell you where you're going and tell you what grants are available.
And so when you say grants, you mean actual assistance in buying
mortgage property? Actual assistance in buying. And a lot of it is matching grants. You put in $1,000, we'll give you three, up to $6,000. We just rolled that out 3 days ago. If you put $1,000 in, we'll give you three, up to a match of $6,000.
So the bottom line is, if you have a dream of home ownership, keep dreaming. It's possible.
It's absolutely possible for everybody, whether you're buying a $50,000 house or a $2 million house in Elmhurst.
You a big March Madness guy? You got a bracket filled out?
You know, I have to do that today because I usually wait till the end and then I say I win, but I do need to get on that right away. I'm looking forward to it. It should be a good time. It's always fun.
Always March Madness, always a good time. John, good to see you, and we'll see you again next month.
Good to see you. Thanks, Steve.
John Horton is the Vice President and Senior Lending Manager at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page and follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And our thought leaders are ready to answer your questions. Send them along via email to thoughtleader@wgnradio.com. That's thoughtleader@wgnradio.com. And your questions could be answered right here on the opening bell.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:40 in Indiana. There's a push to buy everything that's made in Indiana, including agricultural products. It's called Indiana Grown. We're happy to have with us this morning the director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture, Ted McKinney, to talk just a little bit about this. Ted, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us here this morning. Are you eager to get out into the fields over there and get rid of some of the snow?
Well, we got teased a couple of times where folks thought maybe they should get out, but I think we're probably going to stand by that usual April 15 plus or minus for a planting date. We'll see, though.
Yeah. This is a wonderful program. It's called Indiana Grown. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Sure. Well, Indiana Grown is really a branding program created by our legislature and then handed to us at the State Department of Ag. And it taps into the local foods movement is what it does. It's a movement that I think everybody is seeing. Certainly everybody in your listening area would know it in their own form. And we, too, had our farmers, our processors, our retailers that wanted to take advantage of it. So after about a year of research with a commission that we had developed, we formed the Indiana Grown Program. And here, a year and a half or so later, we're now at 700 members. And these include everybody. I mean, the beautiful thing about this is it's a big tent. We have many, many, many farmers. Most of them are people producing something. So it could be honey. It could be barbecue. It could be pork. It could be sweet corn. Anything that you might imagine that could go on a grocery shelf. And if they produce that in Indiana, then they can stick the Indiana Grown label on it. We also have participating people who prepare food. So think of here in Indiana, we have Red Gold. In Delphi, Indiana, we have Indiana Packers. We have a number of egg producers. In your listening area, we have Fair Oaks Farm. All of them participate in the preparation area, so they too can participate. And then, of course, many, many and a growing number of our retailer stores want to carry this stuff, and they want to participate as well. So it's a program that's branding that which is produced, prepared, or carried on the shelves locally.
And it's one of those things, by the way, if you're listening and you want to follow along, you can visit indianagrown.org, where there's some more details about this. But, Ted, this is sort of that farm-to-table notion, sort of on steroids, it seems like, over there, where you have not just things grown in a field, but things that are produced all over Indiana.
It is. They can come from all walks, all corners of the state. In fact, we can even take some from Illinois as long as it's processed here. You know, they have to carry a different label, but we have our preparers, our processors that all want to participate. And yeah, it's growing like crazy. We've got some distributors that are focusing just on that, which is an Indiana grown type product. It's helping the retailers. And I'll tell you, though, the stories of people that we're lifting up are amazing. Many times it's a brand new startup farmer. Good for them. Lots of times, though, it's a traditional farmer that you'd see going down the road who want to bring a son, a daughter, a niece, a nephew back to the operation, but it's just not profitable now. So they're looking at different ways to do that. And it's just heartwarming to hear of these folks catching some extra business opportunity by way of this brand.
It reminds me of when I was a younger boy growing up in southern Illinois. There used to be farm stands everywhere where we would buy things that are made close to our homes. As much as things change over the years, things are sort of the same, aren't they, in this area? People want to eat good food, things that are grown near them, but had they just not been able to find it until now?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because I did the same with sweet corn on our own farm. And for sure, many of our Indiana-grown members still do the farmers markets. It's just that they're limited in the number of family members or employees that can get to all of the farmers markets. So what they'll do is they'll participate in the farmers markets, but they're also seeing a more regular, consistent, and I'd say more efficient distribution of their products through Indiana Grown and the distributors that are set up to do that. So they're doing both, frankly.
Well, let's talk, Ted, about Indiana's agriculture, the industry there. By the numbers, how is it? Is it healthy?
Well, I would say that we're a lot like farmers in the rest of your listening area in Illinois and Wisconsin, where on the farm it's pretty tough these days. We're in year three or four of a really down farm economy, and I would say if they're breaking even at best, most are not. Now, farmers are used to this. They went through a very, very boom time a few years ago. So this is a cyclical thing that many are used to. But the younger farmers, it's going to be tough if we have another year or two. I would say, though, before the farm gate, producers, technology providers, and those after the farm gate, it is just a crazy and wonderful time in Indiana. We're adding a lot of processing in the way of dairy, in pork, in poultry, two pet food companies, two new North America headquarters for equipment companies have come here. And so it's a great time overall in the agribusiness area. But I tell you, a lot rides on that farm, so we're sure hoping we can get prices to rebound in the next year or two.
Is that the big part of it? Is it the prices, getting better prices? What else has to be done to build up this economy?
Well, it's like anything else. It's the laws of supply and demand, and right now we have a world glut on particularly corn. I'd say a lot the same in soy and soybean meal, and with it go DDGs out of ethanol plants. And when you've got a world glut, China's not buying, or not buying as much. Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Europe are not buying as much. And so, it just sits there and it just takes that price down. As we work off those global stocks, I think we'll be coming back in a year, maybe two. And I think we're going to see price recover. And I'm speaking particularly of commodity grains, commodity livestock. That's why the Indiana Grown program, which is a sort of a niche program, specialized, local, it can in many cases command a premium. And that's where I think farmers of all types are finding diversification.
That was going to be my next question, is how big of an impact, a further impact on the bottom line, would taking part in Indiana Grown be for growers?
Sure. Well, I would say most Indiana Grown members, none are huge in scope. I mean, people are testing this out in many cases, and you go from making it in your garage to the next thing is a co-packing processing facility that might be small. And if you grow a little more, you can go to a much, much more efficient place. So we're seeing growth across many, many, many of our members. But I would say not a lot of it is ready for full-time family occupation without that second or third job. In many cases, that's on the farm in commodity grains. But hey, it's bringing a child back. It's continuing the family farm. It's making them happy. It's certainly making consumers happy. So we're happy to do our part in bringing this program along to help out a bit.
I don't want to put words into your mouth, but I would imagine it is good or at least optimistic having someone you know in the White House helping your state with agriculture, helping all farmers. How is that relationship, do you think, going to be beneficial for farmers, not only in your state, but in other states?
Well, we're blessed to have our former governor, now Vice President Trump, in the position he is because he gets agriculture. He oftentimes spoke of growing up and outside the backyard in Columbus, Indiana, was a cornfield. And he certainly lifted up and supported Indiana agriculture, and I would say all of ag, for that matter, when he was governor. It's one of the reasons I chose to leave the corporate world to go work for him. It was a time for me to do my public service bit. So he gets agriculture. And I would say on the upside, we're seeing a lot of positives with the removal of onerous, very onerous in some cases, regulations. And I think soon as they move through healthcare issues, they'll tackle the whole trade issue, which certainly has everybody nervous. I mean, NAFTA has been good for agriculture. Even TPP, I think, was looking to be good for agriculture. But we also get that it may not have been right for the rest of our colleagues in society. So the hope is that as we move to bilaterals, which is what it seems to be doing, bilateral trade agreements, country to country, that it'll be all right. But one thing I'll assure you, the man does know the importance of trade, knows the importance of agriculture, knows how it works. So we're thrilled, and we periodically feed information and insights to he and his team.
Ted, good of you to be with us this morning on the opening bell, and best wishes to Indiana for a really good growing season this year.
Hey, thanks, and all the best to you as well.
All right, Ted McKinney is director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. Again, you can check out Indiana Grown at indianagrown.org. You can even follow them on Twitter at Indiana_grown, and we will link all of those to you as well.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
5:54 back here on the opening bell on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures looking for a solid open on Wall Street later this morning, up 63 points. NASDAQ futures up almost 17. S&P futures up 7. Crude oil is trading up almost a full percent, 49.22 a barrel. Gold and silver also trading up this morning. A couple of stories making news today. President Trump unveiling his $1.15 trillion budget. Far-reaching overhaul of federal government spending that slashes a dozen cabinet departments to finance a significant increase in the military, down payments as well on the U.S.-Mexico border wall. The release of the budget will upend Washington with cuts to long-promised campaign targets like Foreign Aid and Environmental Protection Agency, but it will also hit some social programs. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting included in there, the National Endowment for the Arts also included with the very, very strong cuts to their budgets, if not a full elimination. Also today, President Trump's choice to head an agency overseeing potentially risky financial market activities plans to ease regulations put in place following the financial crisis. Mr. Trump announced Tuesday that he's naming former brokerage firm executive J. Christopher Giancarlo as chairman of the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. The man has been appointed by President Obama to fill a Republican seat, Giancarlo, but he has also been acting CFTC chairman since Trump's inauguration. Now, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Thursday, March 16th, 2017, some of the reports that could move the markets today, two of them, as a matter of fact, from the Labor Department. One reveals the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. The other deals with job openings and labor turnover in January. Also, the Commerce Department reports on U.S. home construction in February. Freddie Mac will report on this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. Some other things happening. It's NCAA March Madness beginning today, the big men's basketball tournament. Also, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson visits Japan on his first leg of the trip there to the East Asia and Pacific region, later stops in South Korea and China. And the National Cherry Blossom Festival is scheduled to get underway in Washington, D.C. South by Southwest Festival continues in Austin. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, March the 16th, 2017.